Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, the question every single person asks me at a table, it seems to ask every server at a table in a restaurant, is what?
What should you eat tonight? What should we eat tonight? Yeah. Definitely.
Well, a lot of times, if they're out for a special occasion or if they're excited about the restaurant, they ask, so what's the best thing?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the most exciting thing? And that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about what is the best thing you ever ate.
Which is a fun topic.
It is a fun topic.
When I tried to write mine down, it was very hard.
We're live. Give us a call, 410-662-8780, or email us if you like, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And give us an idea.
We'd love to hear from you.
What is the best thing you ever ate? As diverse as people's experiences are, and feelings about food. I'm always curious to hear
what
was the most exciting thing.
Right, and it can be, you know, the best thing you ever ate in a restaurant, or maybe your mom made it or dad made it for you, or whenever. But it would be interesting also to hear, you know, restaurant and traveling. You know, you're out on a big trip that you were really looking forward to. You know, what did you end up, you know, being the most excited about or surprised about? I mean, I know we've been on a couple of trips where we had things that I never thought, you know, that would be the best thing. Kind of like Spain, you know, eating on the coast of Spain. I mean,
eating in Spain is the best thing.
Well, yeah, that's for sure. But the eating coastal seafood there, oh my gosh, the quality of the seafood is just so amazingly good. And to have it prepared so simply and have that feel like it was the best thing you ever ate, that's kind of amazing. And that's the beauty of food.
Yeah, there's some of those things I thought about from my list, but they didn't make my list.
Okay, so what did?
Well, now let's go ladies first.
Okay.
What's first on your list?
Well, I have about 25 things on my list.
Okay, cheated. Okay, so three. You get three.
I have one.
You can't cheat.
I'll never forget the first time I ever ate truffles, which of course was with you. And we were in France at Fine Roche. And actually you had the first dish and they brought a tray of truffles to you at the table and said you could pick your truffle. And it went from there. That was amazing.
And so I picked a truffle, and then
it was a potato and truffle salad with extra virgin olive oil and salt and pepper, and I mean it was just one of the most amazing things ever. I think you had three courses of it.
Well, I had two. I had it the first time, and then I had a second course, and then I was hungry, and that was one of the best things I ever eaten, that's for sure.
And wasn't the experience of eating truffles, smelling them, you know, filling the room with their perfume and really getting to, you know, experience that. I mean, we had several courses with truffles, and it was just like, oh my gosh, this is the most amazing thing. But, you know, that is also my sort of holy grail as a chef. I love working with truffles, so it's you know, that memory of having them the first time was great.
It is crazy to have a mushroom that has that sort of exotic scent and that particular texture, you know, to actually be a little crunchy and to be, you know, super aromatic like that.
Well, and you can't imagine because there is nothing like a truffle. So to get to have that was...
The dish you mentioned, it has, what is it, four ingredients?
Right.
Potatoes, cooked beautifully.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and just, they were warm.
They were still not hot, but warm, like it cooled to room temperature. And salt, like crunchy Camargue sea salt, and the slices of truffle, and very good olive oil from that area. And
yeah, it was an incredible experience. So what's your first one?
You probably can guess the first thing on my list. It was from Can Roca. Can Roca is a restaurant in Girona in Spain, north of Barcelona. And it has become super duper famous. The first visit there was a 2-star Michelin restaurant, which is pretty famous and just been redone as a new space, I guess, a couple of years before. But it was before it got its 3rd star. And in the past couple of years, they've gotten, you know, various best restaurant in the world awards and the best restaurants in Europe countdowns from like, you know, 11 to 5 to 2 to 1 and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we had dinner there and it was sort of an odd spread out sort of setup. And
it was an unusual dining room.
And the menu, I was super entertained by the first menu I ever saw there, because they had new dishes on there, but they also had sort of a greatest hits mm-hmm. section of the menu, and that was this dish from 1994, or this dish. It was a restaurant that opened in 1986, originally with their mom, his three brothers, and this dish from 2002, and this dish from 2005. And the 2004 dish that I ordered, that I still think about and freak out about, was a crispy goat belly. Now, just like, you know, pork bellies are turned into bacon. This was not cured though, and this was the skin had been gotten crispy. It was definitely
rusted.
It was cooked sous vide. I never really had anything cooked sous vide before that.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And I have my moments of having issues with that as a process, but this was done like anything that you could disagree with. It done beautifully. It was done, you know, it was emotionally engaging, let's say.
It was brilliant. It was a beautiful thing.
And yeah, the skin was crispy and the meat was perfect. And there are little tiny favas in the area and tomato and some crunchy sea salt. And there was a little bit of jus, you know, whether it was goat stock or lamb stock or something, but just amazing stuff. I recall the wine we had with it, but it was the dish overshadowed the wine gigantically.
And that was such an incredible experience. I will never forget the desserts from there. They were the most brilliant desserts I've ever seen in my life. They were replicating perfumes. That was just mind-boggling that they were capable of doing that. And then I don't know if you had it or one of the other chefs had it, but someone had the chocolate dish with the cigar.
Well, that's my 1A is the chocolate cigar that I had that night.
Oh, that was you. Yeah. So, oh my, that was amazing. So it looked exactly like a cigar.
I smoked cigars for a bunch of years.
Yes, you did.
I love them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the one that I smoked, my Holy Grail cigar, was a Partagas Series D No. 4. And that is what it said on the menu was turned into a chocolate dessert.
That's crazy. I didn't realize
and
that part.
You can look up the recipe and the technique, and you can even watch about Jordi Roca, who's a wizard.
Yes.
For sure.
Definitely.
On the Netflix Chef Table program about pastry chefs. So that's there's a plug for you, Jordi. Anyway, let's go to a caller. Let's go to John in Towson. John, you're on.
Yes.
Hi, John. Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. I was going to share a best food memory. 18 years of age, having traveled for 3 weeks on next to nothing, and then arriving into Paris with my sister, meeting me, who was a graduate student there, and she could tell I was hungry, so we went out in a restaurant on the West Bank near where she was staying, and it was just steak frites, and it was just the most marvelous meat and potato I'd ever had. So that's my memory.
It's a good one.
It is a happiness thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And I had a question about asparagus. I mean, it's I'm never really very happy with how I do it, how to kind of cook it, basically. Okay.
There are a couple of ways you can cook it, but I mean, the best way to me, honestly, is to just bring a large pot of water to a boil with a good amount of salt. You do want to peel the asparagus if they're of any size, you know, short of them being like the thinness of a pen, which if you peeled it, it would probably leave you nothing. But usually asparagus is bigger than that. So peel it and try to just gently peel it. Don't gouge into it. You know, just do a thin peel and then bring that pot up to a boil with, as I said, some salt and just blanch them. And it only takes, it depends on how thick the asparagus is, but you want them to be crisp.
It's got to be boiling when you put them in.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, okay.
And that the reason I say a big pot of water is because you want that boil to recover immediately. So in order for that to happen, you have to have a lot more water than the amount of asparagus that you have. That's with any green vegetable. And that's also how you retain a lot of the vitamins and the vibrancy of the vegetable as well. So and then if you're not going to eat it right away, you want to shock it in an ice water bath. So that stops the cooking process. And then either eat it cold as a salad. You could throw it on a grill later on and serve it with some chicken or whatever, a piece of fish.
But you're in the water for how long?
Cool it down really fast is what you're saying.
Yes, you want to
don't eat it right away.
Exactly. You want to stop that cooking process. So if you put it in you know, almost all ice with a little bit of water, it will stop the cooking immediately, cool it down immediately. And that way, because if it's still hot, it's going to continue to cook until it's cooled down. In other words, you know, it's going to change the texture.
It'll carry over.
Yeah, we call it carrying over. And that's like if you do Erica Vare or green beans or, you know, any sort of green vegetable, that's the way you want to cook it. And as I said, you could toss it in some oil and salt and pepper and throw it on the grill and heat it up with your whatever your main entree is, item is, like chicken or a piece of fish. And then if you want to make a salad, then you're ready to go. Then you can just toss it with oil, salt and pepper and some herbs, maybe a little bit of chive or tarragon or chervil, and add it, cut it into smaller pieces and add it to some beautiful local greens, which we're getting right now. So that would be a, you could add a little bit of vinegar, but add that at the very last moment because it will discolor the asparagus. So.
Wow, Cindy, thank you so much.
Sure. That's You're very, very welcome. Thanks for calling, John.
Yeah. Thank you.
So you're listening to Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR, and we're live. So give us a call, 410-662-8780. We'd love to hear about the best thing you ever ate.
We're excited to hear from you.
That John's call was interesting because he mentioned the circumstance, and I can. It's very easy to imagine, you know, being 18.
Oh, definitely.
3 weeks in Europe,
so
zero
exciting.
Budget, and have someone feed me a steak free.
Right, that sounds good.
In Paris, that's love, right there.
Yummy. All right.
Let's go to. We have a caller. Looks like it's an interesting question. A second, John, but this one in Glenarm.
Hi, John.
John, go ahead. No more, John.
Okay. All right.
We've got an email. Let's see. I took my first trip to the Southwest last year. This is from Bobby in Baltimore. We went to New Mexico. The trip was amazing. The landscapes are breathtaking. After a day-long hype up Kitchen Mesa, we decided to get dinner at the one restaurant in the little town where we stayed. We sat outside in the warm desert air and had lovely service and conversations with the other patrons. I had chili rellenos and enchiladas. The chilies there were so fantastic. While the food was great, you can probably tell from my description, it's just as much about the experience and atmosphere as it was the food. It was the perfect night. I must go back.
That's beautiful.
You're making me jealous, Bobby and Baltimore.
Yeah, that sounds so great. All right.
So let's hear the second item on your list.
Giant asparagus at Lemme Louie. Oh my gosh! I never even knew you. And that's John. Thanks, John, for the call. Because
when you say giant, you mean
a huge
giant.
Yeah, like bigger than what your thumb. I mean, you know, in thickness or almost that thick.
Almost, pretty much. Yeah, almost.
Maybe
as
a
big
little.
As your thumb.
Yeah, and then long. And oh my gosh, it came to the table.
You know what? Almost about as thick as a highlighter.
There you go. And so it comes to the table, and not only they give you this plate with all this huge asparagus on it that literally is falling off. I mean, it's like hanging off one end of the plate, and that's Lemme Louie. Lemme Louie is a pretty famous bistro in Paris, and I mean, nothing is small there. The portions aren't small. The restaurant's small, actually, but the portions aren't small.
And the personalities of the staff
the personalities
are not
huge. Oh, my God. It's the most fun place, but it's also expensive, unfortunately, but you know, the asparagus is literally hanging off the plate. It's just so delicious. But then it comes with this gigantic bowl, like a big glass bowl that I would use to toss, you know, lettuce in to make a salad for like six people, full of vinaigrette. And I'll never forget that because it just, you know, in the kitchen, we do everything we can to not waste anything. And
not their MO.
No, not in any way. And I have to tie it into the fact that not only did we have this beautiful vinaigrette with this absolutely crazy, amazing asparagus from Lond, France, but at Lemme Louie, but we also had, the first time you and I went there, we had terrina foie gras. And again, it was around the time that I had just started to make terrina foie gras and really worked with foie gras. Obviously, this was a long time ago. And we ordered it, and it came to the table. And our foie gras is, you know, what, $33 a pound, something like that. It came to the table and it was three slabs.
It was a mountain of terrina
foie gras. I couldn't even believe it. I'm like, that's so luxurious and expensive and over the top. And how are we going to eat that? And I want to eat that. But my God, that's a lot of trouble.
That's a whole nother show. How can you eat foie gras on an asparagus budget, right?
Yeah, right. And then the other thing was they just kept bringing us fresh toasted grilled baguette. And it was just so generous.
That's to absorb all the wine. let's go to John in Glenarm is back with a question about local wine. How are you, John?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Hey, good. John. Good morning.
So I'll share a quick memory. We have friends who rent a house in the Loire Valley every year.
Nice.
And we've been able to go visit them there a couple times. And one particular little bistro we ate at had a daily special with rabbit, and it was wonderful. But the side dish was an egg custard with little slivers of celery root, celerac. And it was just the most wonderful flavor, the way they blended with the egg.
That sounds so good.
That really stood out. It's one of my favorite root vegetables, too.
Sure.
But anyway, I love going to and patronizing restaurants that feature local farm-to-table and local food sources. But I kind of noticed that they tend to not feature or even offer very many local or at least regional Mid-Atlantic wines. And I'm kind of curious if there's a reason that there isn't more on the wine side of featuring local providers.
I will admit that for us, sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. I absolutely respect the viticulture that's in Maryland and in the Mid-Atlantic. I don't always know that, and everyone will not agree with me, I don't know if the quality-price ratio is what it should be. If you're charging people for wine in a restaurant, you're going to pay a markup on the wine, correct?
Sure.
So honestly, why are you paying? You're paying it for a certain level of expertise, service. How is the wine kept? How is it actually organized with the cooking? If the heart of Cindy's cooking, for example, is French, there's a lot of French wine that makes a lot of sense with what she does. And that's just, I mean, these are obviously personal feelings. Everyone has their own personal feelings about wine. And frankly, if nothing else, you remind me that it's important to continue to taste and see what the developments are in wine that's in the Mid-Atlantic. Because I know it is improved over the last 20 years. I'm sure it will continue to accelerate in that.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thanks for calling.
So, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR, it'll be more of the best thing you ever ate, your memories of it. And it's interesting right away. It's the circumstance.
It is. It's so important.
So give us a call, 410-662-8780, or send us an email, formanwolf@wypr.org. We'll see you in a few minutes on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. Give us a call, 410-662-8780. And our topic, at least our base topic, is what's the best thing you ever ate?
Such a good one.
Already interesting stories.
I can't wait to hear what Katie has to say.
Yeah, Katie in Towson has a story for us.
Hi.
Hey, Katie. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning. We were listening in, and one of the best things that I've ever eaten is during our honeymoon. My husband and I went to Hong Kong, and we got to try a lot of different types of food. His family's from there, and it was wonderful. And one of my favorite things that we ate was these steamed dumplings, but they were pan-fried on the bottom. They're on this huge...
Yum.
That sounds happy. What was the filling of the dumplings?
Yeah, what was in them?
It was a soup dumpling, so it was filled with pork, and then right when you bit into it, it was spurred out with a ton of soup, and it was hot and it was steamy, but it was just so rich.
It sounds like something to wear clothes
that you don't want to, that you're not going to miss.
Exactly. When I bit into it, it spurted right into my husband's face.
Oh!
Yeah, so glad
and you're still married.
Here's your face. Yeah.
That's awesome. Did you have anything else there that you loved in particular?
My husband loved the sushi there. We had this amazing sushi buffet, and he still talks about the uni. And we went on our honeymoon in November.
Congratulations. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
That's
all the best to you both.
Thank you for calling us, Katie. Thanks.
Let's go to Carolyn in Baltimore. Carolyn, you're on?
Hi, thank you.
Hey, Carolyn. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
So I have a question. I just got a bunch of garlic scapes, and I know you can saute them. I know you can pan fry them. I know you can roast them. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering about a way to use them in pasta.
I would blanch them the same way Cindy was talking about blanching asparagus.
Okay.
Cook them a little bit longer if you'd like them to be a little more mellow.
Yeah.
If you want more strength of flavor, just for a few moments, or you know, probably 30 seconds, something like that.
Yeah.
I would do that right before you cook your pasta. Honestly, not to get into it, but pasta is almost the same idea. You know, you cook a lot of water.
Right.
Plenty of salt. Pasta goes down. When the pasta is maybe a minute out, drop your garlic scapes.
Okay.
When the pasta goes into the pan, you want to already have the garlic scapes in there, hot. You know, a hot pan, oil, garlic scapes go in there. They get rid of a little bit of that water that's there.
Right.
And they flavor that oil, and then your pasta goes in the pan.
Yummy.
And whatever else you do with it. But that the whole ball game is getting flavor into the pasta, so you want to maximize flavor on the garlic scapes.
Right.
And then maybe a little fresh tomato when it's in season, too.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, and you're probably a good amount of, you know, a nice amount of salt and maybe some form of cheese, Tony?
You could. I mean, honestly, zucchini is the first thing that comes to my mind is being nice.
And you could julienne the zucchini. That would be kind of fun.
Oh,
you
know, that'd be great.
Yeah, to have a long, not too thin, but, you know, a nice long piece.
Right.
And that way it'll just sort of fold in with the pasta and the garlic scapes.
Right.
That would
be
nice.
They make these little machines that you can put zucchini on to make zoodles, sort of noodles.
Yeah, that might be a good use. Yeah, that would be a good use for that.
Yeah, find a pasta the same size, and you can sneak vegetables in on your kids.
Thanks for calling, Carolyn.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's talk to Angie in Baltimore, who I think has a rockfish situation.
Hi.
Hi, Angie. Good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
I had to call when you said your favorite dish because I think I ate it on Valentine's Day, and that was a beautiful piece of rockfish, which I put a crab imperial on top of, but the setup, as Cindy was says, it's a situation. It so happened that I got this idea to do this for my husband for Valentine's Day because, I knew he'd like that particular dish. So I called my local fishmonger. I wanted really fresh fish. I called Little Lou's, where I get my seafood, and he said he could get me a piece. I called him a few days ahead of time that I could pick up on Tuesday. So I'd be really, he gets it fresh, you know. So
Good. So
I went and got it on the Tuesday before Valentine's Day, which was Wednesday. And it was beautiful. It was about a 2-pound fillet with the skin just on the one side. But it was then on Tuesday that I realized, belatedly, that Wednesday, Valentine's Day, was also Ash Wednesday, which for my family, Catholics, is a day of strict fast and abstinence. Well, we lucked out. Abstinence means no meat, so fish is not meat. But the fasting part was a little tricky. But, you know, short of calling the Pope, we kind of thought, well, you know, Valentine's Day is love and God is love, so he would want us to eat this fish. So I did cook
it. And if
it.
God was from Baltimore, he would love rockfish and crab imperial.
Yes, yes. And I tell you, I just put it in a pan. I don't have a broiler, but I put it in a glass dish. I put some lemon juice on it. I got the crab cakes that I had frozen, which was Maryland crab meat, and I had made them, and they were good as crab cakes, but I kind of patted them down, broke them up on top of the rock, and I made what my mother would call an imperial sauce, which was very simply mayonnaise thinned out with some milk, thick enough so that it doesn't dribble off. Put that, mounted it prettily on the top, sprinkled it. I might have sprinkled the Old Bay on the top. I don't remember. It might have been paprika or Old Bay. Put it in a hot oven for about 15 minutes. It was all done beautifully. It browned. It looked like it had been in the broiler. And we hadn't eaten much all day. We were fasting for this one big meal, which isn't exactly the letter of the law, but I thought the spirit of the law. And it was, and we still, well, I still talk about it anyway.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, Angie.
That's a good
story. We're happy
story.
To be your food confessor.
Yeah, and also, I bet you're still married after that Valentine's Day, aren't you?
Well, yes, I am, but now I don't know. I'm hoping that my pastor isn't listening to
me. That's awesome.
You know, if I'm eating bread and water.
No, Catholic marriage is forever. You remember
all
that.
All right, all right.
That's
thanks,
that
Angie.
Sounds so good. Thanks, Angie.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So Let's just keep going because we've got a bunch of calls
to talk to people.
Tracy in Jefferson, Maryland.
Good morning. Hey, I love your show. I just discovered it about a month ago, and I can't get enough of it. I love it. Thank you for
thanks,
Tracy.
What you guys do.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
That's awesome. If you miss us, you can always download podcasts.
Go to
the WYPR.
The car.
Yeah, okay. WYPR cool. website and.
Thanks. That's nice
and
to hear.
Look for the formal web page. That's great.
We're never sure who's out there, Tracy. So thanks for that.
Now we know Tracy's out there.
Yeah,
I'm here.
All right.
But
cool.
I just wanted to share a memory. My mother was. My late mother was from Sri Lanka. My father married her and brought her over here. She was the first one in her family to come to the United States. But she taught me love of the Sri Lankan curried meals. And she was notorious for cooking up a big Sri Lankan feast. And I got my love of the spicy, the chutney, anything curried my mother would do. And the challenge was, that since she's passed away, I can still cook a little bit of it, but... there's no good Sri Lankan restaurants in this area up here in Frederick County, so I'm kind of suffering. So I'm forced to somehow use some of the items you find in the market to take a shortcut. But she taught me. I just have fond memories of when I was younger going over to her house and eating a big batch of either a curried pork or a curried beef and a basmati rice. And she would just have the ability to take anything and curry it, whether it was fish or soft-shell crab or anything. And I always have that fond memory, so
that's
just wanted to
just
share
awesome.
That.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing. That's nice to hear.
Thank you, Tracy.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
And you are listening to Formula Wolf on Food & Wine on WYPR. We're live today. Give us a call, 410-662-8780, or email us, formanwolf@wypr.org. We're talking about the best thing you ever ate, and we're getting really cool stories from listeners, so... Let's go to Quinn in Severna Park.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Quinn.
The best
hi, Quinn.
Thing I ever ate was, for my birthday, I went to this restaurant where they cook in front of you.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of my family members have been there before, so I went with what they got. And they got something called, I think, a flaming gnome. And so the really cool part about it is that the chef, he made a volcano out of onion.
Oh, my gosh.
And and it actually erupted. So
wow.
You have, like, fire coming out of it, and
that's
it was super
amazing.
Cool.
That is super cool. Wow.
That's great. Well, happy birthday, Quinn.
Did it taste good?
Thank you.
Quinn, did it taste good?
It was delicious.
Okay. All right. Onion volcano.
That's what counts.
I would like to see that, too. Thank you for
that's
calling us, Quinn.
Well, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Quinn.
Oh, my gosh. Our first child caller. That was fun.
That was neat. Cool. Well, I mean, that's half of my memories are all set in childhood.
Oh, my
like,
gosh.
You know,
yeah. That's part of my list.
That's on my list, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's... who's up? Is it me?
Yes, your turn.
Okay. Not a childhood memory, but one... Gosh dang it, that's really important to me. The Agnolotti del Plin at Trattoria della Posta. Now, the hard part was I can think of three great Agnolotti del Plin. Agnolotti del Plin is a little rectangular, you know, you think of it as, I guess we say ravioli a lot of times in the States. Agnolotti means it's squared off and it's small, but they actually make them as rectangles because it's easier to make the shape that way. And del Plin means it gets a pinch in the center. It's a Piemontese dish. And all three of the restaurants are in the Barolo area. The Trattoria della Posta is in Monforte d'Alba. It opened just a few weeks ago in 1875. The chef is the same family who's been there from the beginning, Gianfranco Massolino. They also have a famous winery, Massolino, in Serralunga d'Alba, one village over. And my runners up are two. Like this is one of those. Like it's hard to run into a bad agnolotti in that part of Italy. There's a restaurant, also a winery, Brezza, where Enzo's mom, who's got to be 92 or 93 now, and I don't know, she can't still be making them, but she made imperfect rectangles at the least the last time that I was there. But she sneaks the regular filling is pork and veal or just pork.
Okay.
Posta uses pork and veal.
Mm-hmm.
She uses pork and pork liver.
Oh my, yum.
And there's a particular sweetness to that. And
that sounds so good.
I love her annual. And usually, sometimes people will steam them or they'll just serve them with no sauce in a plate or with just a little bit of butter because all the flavor is inside the filled pasta. So anyway, that's what's on my list. And yes, you do drink plenty of Barolo with...
Definitely.
With
Why
this
would you
particular
not?
Dish.
Mm.
So... I've got an email here from a listener.
Okay.
Let's see. My greatest food memory was about 14 years ago. I am an attorney and had a four-day jury trial in circuit court in Montgomery County. That's unusual just to begin a food memory with. Wow. I was also 9 months pregnant.
Oh, wow.
For the first 3 days, the only thing I had time to eat during lunch break was a power bar.
Uh-oh.
Because I was prepping witnesses, etc.
Wow,
God bless you.
Yeah.
Aye, aye, aye. One of my witnesses happened to moonlight as a cook in a restaurant.
Thank God.
And on day four, brought me this magnificent spread that included cream of crab soup and freshly baked bread.
Mm.
One of the best meals of my life. And yes, I won the trial and gave birth three
yes,
days later.
Awesome. You're awesome.
You win.
Wait, what's her name?
Diana. Diana wins at life.
You're very cool, Diana. Thank you for sharing that one. Wow, man.
It's amazing.
Powerhouse. Yes, my sister's a prosecutor. I appreciate that. Yes. All right.
Let's go to Lynn in Annapolis. Lynn, how are you?
I mean, all these wonderful. Rushing back because of that question.
Lynn, you're on the air.
Good morning, Lynn.
Hi, how are you both?
I need to start saying good afternoon. Good afternoon, Lynn. How are you today?
one day you'll catch
I'm
up.
I'm still in the morning.
I love your show.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're sweet.
Food memories. You're sweeping me away here, and I almost need to write a list. But 1980, backpacking for 3 months from Israel to England, a week in Florence, and this is pre-computers, a week in Florence, I'd read about a little tiny town called Fiesole outside of Florence.
Yeah.
And the best seafood meal my husband and I had ever had. Don't know what we were eating. The restaurant held about six people. That's all, a little tiny hole in the wall, but it was in some student budget guide. It was awesome, especially because of the pasta sauce.
Mm.
So all kinds of wonderful seafood in Fiesole. A Sephardic Jewish mama in outside of Tel Aviv, hosting us. I have no idea, again, what I was eating, but all kinds of Sephardic Jewish foods, not the traditional European Jewish foods with a lot of garlic and but more kibbeh and Middle Eastern kinds of dishes.
Yeah, I always hear great reports on a lot of food in Israel.
On the island of Corfu, being invited and living in a guest house and being invited by the grandmother to come down and dance in the courtyard with the family. We didn't speak Greek, they didn't speak English, but we danced and we ate watermelon.
That's amazing.
That was just amazing.
Everyone can speak dance and watermelon, right?
Right. On the big island of Hawaii, a fish house where I had never heard about. Mahi-mahi, dolphin fish, and this also had been written up as a wonderful place to eat fish, and it was exquisite. Vegemite spread on toast at a friend's house.
I may tell you can have my portion on that one.
You had to be with friends and their children and giggles and you know and feeling, pinching yourself, saying, am I really here? Am I really in Australia?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That's awesome.
So many wonderful. And Baltimore. I'm from Baltimore. I've talked to you before. I'm from Reisterstown Road. Church dinners where I participated in Arlington Methodist Church, participated in lots of church dinners serving the public and communal cooking. And the food always tasted better because we had prepared it.
That's great.
Well,
I can go on and on about food memories, and then my own kitchen and garden in Maine for 6 years, and all the things I prepared for people all around the world. So
that's amazing.
Thank
Lynn.
You for the question. It just brought back a flood of happiness.
That's
That's
great.
Glad that it did.
Thank you, and good for you that you have
great.
Those memories.
Thank you, Lynn.
Beautiful.
Let's go to Let's actually take a quick break. You listen to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. We're live today. You can give us a call, 410-662-8780, or email us, formalwolf@wypr.org, and stay with us. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we are live today. We're talking about all the best things you ever ate. Gotten some really cool stories.
Yes.
You can give us a call, 410-662-8780, or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And let's go right to Sarah in Baltimore.
Good afternoon, Sarah. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you. I'm so excited to be on the show. I love the show. I'm so excited each weekend if I'm in the car and happen to hear it.
That's
You're
nice.
Awesome.
Thank
You're going
to you.
Feed our egos.
Yeah, really. Thank you.
Well, yeah, no, it's a wonderful show. It's
Thanks.
Just about joy and sharing and food, and I love it. So, my favorite food story came the summer between my third and fourth year in medical school. I planted a garden and really didn't know what I was doing, but it was a forgiving garden. I had happened to buy 12 basil plants because they were so tiny when I got them.
And,
yeah, they got a lot bigger. And so my friends and I was incredibly fortunate to have amazing cooks in my class. Like, a lot of us were just great cooks. And so one day I had made just fresh, straight from the garden, basil pesto. And I called one of my best foodie buddies and I said, oh my gosh, this is great. I just made all of this pesto and it's awesome. And he said, I am making lemon pepper linguine right now.
Perfect.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
And so I said, oh, I'm coming over. And I got there. And
way to invite yourself.
Right. No, I know. Well, I think that's how he meant it.
You got to reach for what you want in life, Sarah.
That's right. You don't ask, you don't get. Came in, and he had linguine draped over everything in the apartment, over all the chairs, the lamp, everything was just, you know, fresh linguine everywhere. And we were just about putting it all together. And his roommate, who was one of the architecture students, came bursting into the apartment and said, guess what? Somebody just gave me the most amazing bottle of wine. And we're like, oh. And it was just this perfect moment of all of us so excited with what we had. And it was delicious. Yeah. And anyway,
that's
so
like the perfect day. The stars were all in a line for alignment for you. That's awesome.
Actually,
I have one more question for you, Sarah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Who walks around giving architecture students great bottles of wine?
I don't know. I know. That's crazy.
That's the least plausible part of the story.
I know. I don't know. We didn't even ask. We're like, open it up.
What kind of a doctor are you?
I'm a general internist in Baltimore.
I
love what I do. I love keeping people healthy.
Good.
So.
That's awesome.
Yep.
You're awesome. Thank you so much,
okay,
Sarah.
Yeah.
Great story.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, bye. Have a good day.
Thank you for your show.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's talk next to Edward in Highlandtown. Edward, go ahead.
Hi, Edward.
Hello. I grew up in New York in the early 70s in a very cultural diverse neighborhood, Forest Hills, Queens. And a lot of my friends were Russian and Korean and Indian.
Mm.
And I remember going to their houses and smelling the food and always feeling like I couldn't do it. I wasn't quite ready for that. So flash forward to when I was 18, and I had my first girlfriend who suggested we go to an Indian restaurant. So she took me to this place down in the village near Bleecker Street, and we walked in, and there was a sitar player in the middle of the room, and I remember ordering palak paneer and just going for it and being so mesmerized at how good it was, and also being in love, too, helped.
That's amazing.
That's
beautiful.
That's a good situation for dinner.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Edward.
Thanks, Edward.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
So let's get Elliot in Baltimore. Elliot, you're on the air.
Hi, Hello. Elliot. Hello, Elliot. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. I was just talking about my mom's homemade chili, and I've been eating her chili since I was 5 years old, and I'm 59 now. And
that's a lot
still
of chili.
Makes the best chili in the whole world. I don't know what her secret ingredients are, but I suspect it's just a little bit of vinegar. And you could smell it like a block away when you're coming home. I mean,
yum.
It's just awesome. It makes my mouth water when I think about it, especially on like a cold winter night or fall evening. I mean, it's nothing like it in the whole world. Nothing.
That's awesome.
You would make a huge pot, I mean, long enough to last for a week. And the neighbors would come by and they would eat it. They loved it. Everybody loved it. Nothing but thumbs up for her chili.
Isn't that amazing?
Would she make it as a surprise or when she felt like it? Or did she make it like for your birthday?
She felt like it. Usually on a really crisp fall evening or a cold winter evening. She would do it, and I mean, that was the best thing to look forward to when you came home.
That's so nice. And nice that she shared it, and people, well, that's just generous and wonderful. Good story. Thanks, Elliot.
Thanks, Elliot.
Thank you for taking my call. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
All right, you have a good day.
You too.
All right. We have Peter in Baltimore on the line. Peter, go ahead.
Hey, afternoon, you guys. How are you?
Hey, good, Peter. How are you?
My.
Oh, my God, I love skylines.
I think I know where this is going.
I love skylines.
Okay, so... So one of the things that I love about this topic is it's my story is not so much about my favorite meal, but how much I enjoy introducing other people to new kinds of food and sharing it with them. And I think you two do that a lot.
Sure.
So here's the deal. About it's got to be a decade or so ago, a friend of mine and I, we'll call him Carl, moved from Baltimore to Cincinnati, and I grew up in Cincinnati. And so this was back in the day before you could really ship wine across state lines. So Carl had left behind, God, I don't know, dozens if not hundreds of bottles of really good wine, and he didn't know how to get it to Cincinnati. So another friend of mine and I agreed we would drive it to Cincinnati for him as long as he took us out to a great meal that night. And we got up at the crack of dawn, rented a truck, loaded it up, drove to Cincinnati. But the food is not the great meal Carl took us to that night, which was great. The food story for me was having the opportunity to take my buddy who drove from Baltimore to Cincinnati in the U-Haul with me to Skyline Chili at 3:30 in the afternoon and introduce him to a three-way, a cheese coney, a peppermint patty, and a root beer.
Oh, yeah.
That, to me, was one of the great experiences of my life because I can share something that magical with someone who has a pretty good palate of his own.
You're a good friend, Peter.
Yeah. Hi, Peter. That's
Thanks
awesome.
Thanks for calling.
That's my story.
Love you, Peter.
Love you, too.
Bye.
Bye.
That's awesome.
Yes. We're live today, so Cindy says I love you to all the callers.
Well, we happen to know
so
the last
410-662-8780. Or email us, formerwolf@wypr.org, and we'll try to get you here in the last few minutes. We've got Ben on the line in Lutherville. Ben, go ahead.
Hi, Cindy and Tony. So you know me too, but mine was about 35 years ago in Paris. It's short, in the Ritz Hotel in the grill room. I bet you've been there, and they have a huge French rotisserie.
They
were cooking loup de mer with fennel.
Mm.
It's my first time eating loup de mer. Now they call it bronzini everywhere, and it was just an unbelievable taste that never leaves my mind.
Mm. That sounds so good.
That's awesome.
Thank you, Ben.
Good to hear from you, Ben.
Yeah, okay. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Loup de mer, wolf of the sea, by the way.
Do we have time to get our last one or two? Or do we have a caller? Okay. So you're number three on your list.
Number three on my list is the escargot at Benoit. Oh, my gosh. I could just say so many different things.
Great.
But I love their escargot. I know you like the ones at L'Ami Louis, but escargot at Benoit are my absolute favorite.
I think I like
could
the wine cellar
like L'Ami
Louis, and it flavors the escargot.
Well, there's that.
So Benoit is a one-star Michelin
I'm not sure how many stars they have
but
in Paris.
But it's an old-fashioned bistro.
Owned by Alain Ducasse now.
Yeah, in the first arrondissement in Paris.
Mm-hmm. Really, really great, but that's definitely one of my favorites.
Let's get Robin and Guilford. Robin, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Robin.
You guys?
Good. How
are you?
Good. Good. We've met before, but I'm not going to say where or when.
Mysterious Robin.
My name is Robin. Yes, I have a story about I traveled to Helsinki some years ago with a bunch of chefs to do some dinners in Helsinki and then into Moscow. And while we were there, the chef from Helsinki introduced us to these two fishermen, wife and husband, who were previously models that were doing artisan fishing and
previously models?
The hotel with fish.
Wow. Okay.
So they asked if we would like to go to their island. We could either go out that day commercial fishing, or we could go fish with them and go to their island for dinner. So we opted for the island and going fishing with them. Not to say it was a really cold, cold day and we didn't catch anything. But we did get to spend the day with them and go through a true sauna, which is heated by wood, and sit in a sauna naked, and then you go jump in the fjord, which is just basically it's, about 32 degrees because it's not frozen. And you do that a couple of times, and then they had to stop us from doing it because they say you get hypothermia.
Yeah, Robin, this is a family program. You got to stay. So what was the food that you had?
So we had this beautiful-looking couple that didn't look like fishermen. They had put together, they had a barn, and they had this island, and on the island they only had one generator, so they could either run the generator for the house or run it for this big barn. So they had set up this dinner for us on this long table that was probably about 22 to 23 feet long, cut down boughs from evergreen trees and laid that down in the middle of the table. They churned their own butter. They made their own black bread, and they smoked a variety of different fish. Most of it was flounder, and flounder with the roe. And I remember thinking to myself, gee, this is going to, it's not probably going to be that good because I think it's going to be dried out. But it wound up being the most amazing, and they had great white wine from France. But
that's awesome. That's awesome, Robin. That's
exciting.
That
story.
Was romantic, Robin.
Yes, love it.
Probably has some talent as a film developer or something.
Yeah, I felt like I was watching a film.
Yeah,
that was
exactly.
Pretty amazing.
That was cool.
Oh, that sounded good. All right.
Well, thanks everybody for the calls. We love doing the program live.
We really do. It's great to hear from everyone.
If we didn't catch you, please send us an email, formalwolf@wypr.org. We're sorry we could not get to all the calls.
Yeah, that was
fun. It's obviously a topic we have to revisit.
Definitely.
We didn't even get through our list.
So interesting.
So.
Right. We'll do
and
it again.
And Cindy didn't have to suffer. Chef's challenge. It's a bad day.
Oh, my.
Well, and if you want to download this or any other episodes of Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine, go to the WYPR website, WYPR.org, and the Formidable Wolf page, and be like Tracy. Listen in your car. And on social media, Cindy gets followed on
Instagram as Chef Wolf and on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf.
And I am the real Tony Foreman on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening today.
And a happy Sunday.